ॐ ज्ञानचिन्मरन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं ददाति स्वपदन्तिकम्. वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतपरकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं सगजातं सहगनरघुनाथं इतं त्वं सजीवं सदैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपरं श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च. हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते. तप्तकञ्चन गौराङ्गे राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरि वृषभानुसुते देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रे. पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्याद्वैतगदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 1, Text 16, page 48. We'll read the Sanskrit together. Ananta Vijayam Raja Kunti Putro Yudhishthiraha Nakula Sahadevascha Sugosha Mani Pushpakau Kashyascha Paramashvasa Shikandi Cha Maharutaha Drishtadyumno viratascha satyakischa parajitaha Drupado draupadeyascha sarvasha prativipate Sobhadrascha mahabahu shankandadmu pratak pratak. Translation together. King Yudhishthir, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijaya, and Nakula and Sahadev blew the Sugosha and Manipushpaka. That great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter Shikandi, Drishtadyumna, Virata, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupada, the sons of Draupadi, and the others, O king, such as the mighty-armed son of Subhadra, all blew their respective conch shells. Text 19 together. Sagosho dhartarashtranam hridayani vyadharayat labhascha prithivim chaiva tumulo bhyaninadayan. Translation. The blowing of these different conch shells became uproarious, vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Text 20. Atavyavastitan drishtva dhartarashtran kapidvajaha pravrite shastra sampate tanur udyamya pandava shikesham tadavakyam idam aham mahipate. Translation. At that time, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. Text 21. Arjuna Vacha Senayor Ubayor Madhye Vatam Stapaya Mechuta Yavaritan Niriksheham Yodhu Kaman Avastitan Kairmaya Sahayodhavyam Asmin Rana Samudyame. Translation. Arjuna said, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. Text 23. Yotsyamanam avekshaham yaete trasamagataha dartarashtrasya turbuder yudhe priyachakirshavaha. Translation. Let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. Text 24. Sanjaya vacha evam uktvo rishikesho gudakeshena bharata senayor ubayor madhye stapayitva ratotamam. Translation. Sanjaya said, O descendant of Bharata, having thus been addressed by Arjuna, Lord Krishna drew up the fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties. Text 25. Bhishma Drona Pramukata Sarvesham Chamahikshitam Uvacha Partha Pashyaitan Samavetan Kuruniti. Translation. In the presence of Bhishma, Drona, and all the other chieftains of the world, the Lord said, Just behold, Partha, all the Kurus assembled here. Finally, text 26. Tatrapasyatstitan Partha Pitrin Atapita Mahan Acharyan Matulan Bratrin Putran Pautran Sakins Tata Shashuran Suritas Chaiva Senayor Ubayorapi. Translation. There Arjuna could see, within the midst of the armies of both parties, his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his fathers-in-law and well-wishers. Going back to 16.
Translation. King Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijaya, and Nakula and Sahadeva blew the Sugosha and Manipushpaka. That great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter Shikhandi, Drishtadyumna, Virata, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupada, the sons of Draupadi, and the others, O king, such as the mighty armed son of Subhadra, all blew their respective conch shells. Purport. Sanjaya informed King Dhritarashtra very tactfully that his unwise policy of deceiving the sons of Pandu and endeavoring to enthrone his own sons on the seat of the kingdom was not very laudable. The signs already clearly indicated that the whole Kuru dynasty would be killed in that great battle. Beginning with the grandsire Bhishma, down to the grandsons like Abhimanyu and others, including kings from many states of the world, all were present there and all were doomed. The whole catastrophe was due to King Dhritarashtra because he encouraged the policy followed by his sons.
Sanjaya is expert in diplomatic relations, secretary to the king. Didn't want to displease the king, but on the other hand, he wanted to prepare him for the catastrophe that is about to take place. Because otherwise it would be too big a shock. Well, these are some hints what's going to happen. Basically, your whole family is going to be annihilated. And not only that, but the whole army, both armies, certainly the whole army of Dhritarashtra's son, Duryodhana, will be destroyed. And even the other army will all be destroyed except for the five Pandavas and Krishna and Satyaki. Satyaki is described as unconquerable. That's a hint also. Ajitaha. Jita means conquerable. Ajita means unconquerable. So he's also described as unconquerable. Satyaki. He's the great friend of Arjuna. He learned fighting from Arjuna and he became a great warrior also. Practically on the level of Arjuna. Right? Who was the commander in chief of the Pandava army? You know for sure? Okay, let's go on to 19.
The blowing of these different conch shells became uproarious, vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra.
Yes, because when the conch shells blown on the sides of the Kurus were very strong, but the conch shells blown on the side of Krishna were billions of times stronger. There's no comparison. How can you compare the power of spirit to the power of matter? Spirit. So they were on the spiritual platform. So there's no comparison. Just like the pleasure of spirit is millions and trillions of times greater. The longevity. How can you compare the longevity of spirit compared to the longevity of matter? The longevity of matter is very short. It's always changing. But the longevity of spirit is eternal. Longevity, bliss, knowledge, strength, they're all much greater on the spiritual platform because Krishna's party, the Pandavas, were all situated on the transcendental platform. Therefore, it shattered the other side, the hearts.
At that time, Arjuna, the son of
Pandu... I can read the purport.
When Bhishma and the others on the side of Duryodhana blew their respective conch shells, there was no heartbreaking on the part of the Pandavas. Such occurrences are not mentioned, but in this particular verse it is mentioned that the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra were shattered by the sounds vibrated by the Pandavas' party. This is due to the Pandavas and their confidence in Lord Krishna. One who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord has nothing to fear even in the midst of the greatest calamity.
Victory is always present for those who take the side of Janardhan or Krishna. Paksha. Who take the side of Janardhan, Jayaya, there's always victory. So they took the right side. Krishna's he's also Ajita. He's never defeated. So it's intelligent to take the side of Krishna. And it's unintelligent to take the side opposite of Krishna. Because whoever takes that side will be defeated. However, when Krishna plays with his cowherd boys in Vrindavan, that's a different story. That sometimes he's defeated there. But that defeat is not by superior strength, but it's he's playing the part of an ordinary boy. So that sometimes he's defeated by his friends. Right? One time, Krishna's party was, they were having a contest with the other boys. There were two teams. Krishna was on one team, Balaram was on the other team, to balance it out. One personality of Godhead on each team. So, it turned out that Krishna's team lost, and Balaram's team was victorious. So, the arrangement was that whichever team was defeated had to carry the other group of boys on their shoulders. So, it turned out that Krishna and his group, they had to carry all the other boys on their shoulders. And one of the boys that was on Krishna's side was not actually a coward boy. He was a demon. His name was Pralamba. And he had disguised himself as a coward boy. So he took the side of Krishna, but they were defeated. So he had to carry one of the boys. So he carried Balaram on his shoulders. But he thought, I'll take Balaram away from Krishna and then I'll kill him. Let me get him away from Krishna. So he started carrying Balaram away from the others. And then after he was carrying him for a while, he began to expand his body into his gigantic form. Mahima Siddhi. Mystic power to expand his form. And as he was growing, getting bigger and bigger, Balaram began to notice that this is some change going on here, something unusual. And then he could understand that this was a demon who was trying to kill him. So he gave him a smash, and that was the end of Pralambasura. But thing is, Krishna is not defeated except when he wants to be defeated by his coward boyfriends. And that's part of his... You might say, well, what? It must not be very much pleasant to always be so powerful that you can never be defeated. So yes, Krishna also agrees with that, that it's not so nice to always win. So he allows himself to be defeated. And then someone might say, but if you have to allow yourself to be defeated, then it's not fun either, because then it means there's no excitement, there's no adventure, because you know you can defeat everyone. Someone may say like that. It's a good argument that God must, you say God is the most blissful, he's all happy, but how could he be happy if he controls everyone, and if he's more powerful than everyone, no one can defeat him, then what kind of competition is that? How can that be enjoyable? Sounds like boring. Sounds better to be like we are, because at least when we have a competition, we know we may be defeated, so it's very exciting. It's really exciting because we can really be defeated. But for him, he doesn't get such excitement because he can't be defeated.
Well, the thing is that the other party doesn't know that he's the most powerful. So he takes pleasure in their attitude of thinking that he's equal to them. And
so you're saying that his pleasure comes from the fact that they don't know that he's unconquerable and they try to defeat him. That's kind of fun. It's like, yeah, it's like a father is playing with his child and the child is, you know, trying to defeat him. So because there's love on both sides, the father is actually enjoying the child trying to defeat him. And sometimes he may even play like he's defeated. He may act like he's knocked out and he falls down on the ground. The child takes more pleasure then. I beat him. So for his devotees, he gives special pleasure. He lets them think that they can defeat him sometimes. The son of Arjuna, we were discussing the other day, Babubrahan. I wasn't able to remember his name. The one in Manipur, Babubrahan. Babubrahan. So, yes, we might find it difficult to understand how the Lord enjoys himself because we're so limited. Our intelligence is so poor, our vision, everything is... So we might have a hard time understanding how God is getting his pleasure. But, of course, when we think of him having 16,000 princesses for his wives and expanding into 16,000 forms, then we can get some idea of how he could be enjoying. And all the gopis. So he's able to enjoy himself in myriad ways as the most lovable paramour, as the most lovable husband, most powerful warrior, the greatest friend, most learned. Just look at Krishna, how in every field he excelled. The greatest fighter, the greatest lover, the greatest philosopher, the greatest musician, the greatest son, the greatest father. What else do you want? The greatest, greatest diplomat. What else is there? Athlete? Athletics, well, I mean, if he's a great fighter, it means he's a great athlete also. They're real fighters. They're real athletes. So, just see how Krishna excelled in everything. So famous. So much honored. He had such good characteristics. This is God. He has all enjoyment. If in this world someone can win one big major tournament or some contest, he considers himself to be quite fortunate. But, or one war, it's like, what was that man's name? The one who won the, it was like Schwarzenegger, but, yeah, Schwarzenegger. No, not the governor, the, well, you should know. The one who won that war, the general? Iraq? Schwarzkopf, yeah. So, you know, he won one war and he's famous. We remember his name and it'll go down in history. But Krishna won so many battles, so many wars, more than one. So, Krishna's enjoyment is unlimited. Besides that, he's living in the spiritual world, enjoying there unlimitedly. And at the same time, he can expand himself. Krishna is situated in Goloka. Goloka eva nivisatya kilatma bhuto. Even though he's situated in Goloka, he expands himself as he likes. Advaita machyuta manadi mananta rupam adyam purana purusham navajovanamcha. And he never grows old. Nobody likes to get old and stiff. Can't move anymore. Nobody's attracted to the old man. But Krishna never gets old. He's always young and fresh and beautiful. So much so that generation after generation, all the ladies are all attracted to him. And on the spiritual platform, all the other living entities are attracted as well. And even the inanimate objects are attracted. So someone may ask, well, how is that possible? Now, how can something that's inanimate be attracted? That would mean they have to be animated. So the answer is that yes, on the spiritual platform, everything is conscious. So actually, the inanimate objects that we see in this world, they're not exactly inanimate. They're animate, but they're very dull. Therefore, they're appearing to us to be inanimate. But when the opportunity comes, when Krishna plays his flute, they become animated. The sound of Krishna's flute is so permeating spiritually. It awakens even the inanimate objects. Okay, next verse.
At that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in a military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words.
Yes, when Bhima and the others were taking a pilgrimage to the Himalayas, Bhima went up very high and up into the higher regions. It's described in the Mahabharata that there are regions there that, and this explains why we only see the Himalayas as 26,000 feet, but actually they're 80,000 miles high. We're not seeing it because one has to, first of all, be very pious and very pure to go further. He can only go up to a certain point otherwise, and that's it. He can't go further. He's not allowed. But if he's very pure and very qualified, then he can go further. And then if he performs austerities at particular places, then the residents there advise that they take him further. And then if he performs more austerities and he's more purified, then the residents there take him to higher places and they bestow upon him the ability to see the residents there and to go up. So he was going up. He was very high up there. And as he was walking, he came across a monkey. And it was an old monkey. He was lying down. So, big monkey. So Bhima, he's respectful. After all, he's the son of the wind god. And he has very high culture. He was a very learned scholar also, Bhima. Don't think he was just a fighter. He was also a learned scholar. So he was very cultured. And he said, he didn't want to step over the tail. The tail of the monkey was blocking his way. So we know, even in our Ishtagostis, we say, don't step over anyone, right? You know that in our Ishtagostis, we say, don't step over someone's leg or someone's foot. Or even, you're not supposed to step over anything, really. Out of respect, one doesn't step over, one goes around. So just like when we're, let's say it's a crowded room and we want to go past. So we don't just step over their legs or step over their, you know, bodies. We put our hand down and indicate we'd like to pass, and they move their leg and we walk by. So Bhima was doing like that. He said, can you kindly move your tail? I don't want to step over. And so the monkey said, I'm too old. I can't move my tail. If you kindly just move it for me. And so, Bhima at first he didn't want to do it, but finally, the old monkey convinced him, well, just, I'm so old, I can't even move my tail. Can't you just do that? And he said, all right. So he started to move his tail, but he couldn't lift it. Now Bhima has the strength of, raise your hand if you know what his strength is. 10,000 elephants. Now, 10,000 elephants, and those are elephants, not elephants, today's elephants. Those are elephants 5,000 years ago when they were really strong. So with 10,000 elephants worth of strength, he couldn't lift the tail. And he was shocked. This never happened before, that he couldn't lift something, especially just a little tail of a monkey. So he couldn't lift it. And finally, he was straining and trying, but he couldn't do it. And he said, well, who are you? You must be somebody special. And then the monkey explained that he was Hanuman, the son of the wind god. And of course, Bhima is also the son of the wind god. So they were brothers. This was his elder brother. So he was overjoyed and so happy. And Hanuman agreed as a benediction for his brother. He said, well, first he asked Bhima, asked for a benediction. He said, please help us win the battle. We're going to have to fight against the Kurus. So Hanuman said, yes, all right, I will be on Arjuna's flag. And I will roar and I will help defeat by my roaring. So he was on the flag and he was roaring also. That was one of the signs of victory. Because Kapidvaja was victorious with Ramachandra. So now Kapidvaja was there. Marked the flag of Hanuman. Arjuna's flag was Hanuman.
When we were in Vrindavan and we were walking around Govardhan, I noticed that there was all kinds of murtis of Hanuman holding the mountain and the club. And I was wondering, like, why, you know, because Govardhan Hill?
That wasn't Govardhan Hill. That's, what is it, that
there was
mountain he was bringing back the, I forget the name of it, Okay. He was bringing back the whole mountain because he didn't know which herbs to bring, so he brought the whole mountain to Lord Ramachandra. So as far as why they do things in Vrindavan these days, that's a good question. It's not that they're all pure Vaishnavas. There's all kinds of Mayavadis and everything there. So it doesn't necessarily relate to Vrindavan. And somehow or other, the Mayavadis also like to be in Vrindavan. And they even like to come and take darshan of Krishna Balaram with their three-line tilak and everything in there. So, Krishna is all attractive. You had a question? Okay.
Can Krishna be defeated in court?
Court? Well, they tried to defeat him in the court of Rajasuya. Someone stood up and accused him of being not being qualified. He accused him of being unfaithful, being accused of being a coward, of being so many things, and Krishna took out his Sudarshan Chakra and cut off the accuser's head. That was the end of the court. The decision was that the accuser lost his head. So I don't know how you could defeat him in court. He just pulled out the Sudarshan Chakra.
You said the wind god was the father of Hanuman. Who's the mother? How did he come about?
Hanuman's situation is very interesting because he was not born of an ordinary mother. She was cursed to take the body of a monkey, something like that. Vanara Hanuman. Is that who you're asking about, Hanuman?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's described. He's not an ordinary monkey. No. His father is the wind god, and his mother is also a very, very exalted personality. So he was very exalted. He was so exalted, he's known as Hanuman because when he was a little child, he was so powerful that he thought that the sun was a mango. So he leaped to go at the sun. He was going to grab the sun and eat it. But he was getting too close. So Indra took his thunderbolt and hit him on the chin. So that's why he's called Hanuman. Got hit on the chin. To protect, because otherwise he would have taken the sun and, you know, eaten it or whatever. And that would have ruined the universe. So, but that gives some idea of how powerful he is.
I had heard two things in connection with Hanuman. One was that he's considered one of the 11 Rudras, an incarnation of one of the 11 Rudras, and that he's also actually the son of Shiva and Parvati.
Yeah,
but he was actually adopted by Vayu.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he has the power. That's the fact. Yeah, Lord Shiva's power also. Okay, next. Text 21.
Arjuna said, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms.
So, Krishna has agreed to be his chariot driver, so now he's giving instruction to Arjuna, or to Krishna, to draw his chariot between the two armies. So read the next text.
Let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra.
Yeah. This is the problem. Now he wants to see. When he sees who's there, he'll become overwhelmed. Just imagine if you had to fight some battle and you went to see who was on the other side and you saw all your friends, all your relatives, everybody that you trusted, all your brothers there, your father, all your in-laws, everybody's there against you, your teacher, your guru. So it was a very traumatic, shocking situation to find that everyone's against you. So we're all in that situation because at some point, time will turn against us and no one will be able to help us. It'll appear that everyone's against us because we're being ripped away from everyone. All the attachments we have will actually become very painful because we're attached and now they're being ripped away. That's the problem with attachment, is that when one is forcibly detached, then it's a source of pain.
Go on.
Sanjaya said, O descendant of Bharata, having thus been addressed by Arjuna, Lord Krishna drew up the fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties.
25.
In the presence of Bhishma, Drona, and all the other chieftains of the world, the Lord said, Just behold, Parda, all the Kurus assembled here.
26.
There Arjuna could see, within the midst of the armies of both parties, his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his fathers-in-law and well-wishers.
Purport.
On the battlefield, Arjuna could see all kinds of relatives. He could see persons like Bhurishrava, who were his father's contemporaries, grandfathers Bhishma and Somadatta, teachers like Dronacharya and Kripacharya, maternal uncles like Shalya and Shakuni, brothers like Duryodhana, sons like Lakshmana, friends like Ashwatthama, well-wishers like Kritavarma, etc. He could see also the armies which contained many of his friends.
Any questions?
It says here in the purport that says sons like Lakshmana. Is that, do we understand that Arjuna had a son named Lakshman?
No, Lakshmana. Brothers like Duryodhana, sons like Lakshmana. Lakshmana was the son of
Duryodhana, if I'm not mistaken.
So they were very close.
Even after Krishna instructed Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, it's described in Mahabharata that he tried to leave the battlefield every day successively.
Even after what?
Even after he'd heard the Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, it's described in Mahabharata that, that Arjuna tried to leave the battlefield even after the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. So I was just wondering if you'd comment on that.
Where'd you read that?
I heard that from the Mahabharata. From
Pardon?
A tape of the Mahabharata that Arjuna kept trying to leave the battlefield even after hearing the Bhagavad Gita.
Why?
For the same reason. For the same reason that he states in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, he doesn't want to fight with his relatives.
Well, how did he agree to stay then?
I heard that Krishna kept having to convince him to come back.
Anyway, he stayed. So. Other questions?
In the morning class, you were saying how we should minimize eating, sleeping, and mating. And I was wondering how what do we mean by saying we should minimize defense?
We should minimize defense, yes.
Because, you know, the pure devotee, he doesn't even worry about his own protection.
Haridas Thakur was living in a cave with a big python. He wasn't even concerned about it. He thought, well, if Krishna wants to protect me, I'll be protected. Ambarish Maharaj, when he was attacked by Durvasa and his creation, he didn't do anything. He didn't even pick up a weapon. No defense. That's a very exalted stage, where one is so dependent on the Lord, so confident of the Lord's protection, he doesn't even lift a hand to protect himself.
There's this common statement, though, that God helps those who help themselves. So it's like,
yeah, but he helps those who are fully dependent. That's the best way to help yourself, is to be
completely dependent on Krishna, then he'll help you for sure. What is the need for a, just like, for example, let's say someone attacks the child. The child's standing there with his father, and he's holding his father's hand. The child doesn't have to try to defend. His father's there. Father will take care of it. He knows, what can I do? That's a very exalted stage where one doesn't even try to defend himself. Haridas Thakur was beaten in so many marketplaces, he didn't try to defend himself. And even, like we say, Ambarish was a great Kshatriya and he didn't try to defend himself. Shri Shri Gauranitai ki jai. Shri Bhagavad Gita ki jai.